Now, back to the Eric Stewart Show on WMAL.
So the seller's accepted an offer, and you're representing the buyer. Candy Watts joins me again from our group. Candy, you're representing the buyer. The seller has accepted. What happens next?
Whoa, things start really getting busy.
Okay. Whoa. Okay. Tell us, what kind of busyness are we talking about?
Well, we're talking about ordering home inspections. We're talking about maybe radon inspection. We're talking about getting all the financing in order. We're talking, it just, you know, goes on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So there's financing, there's radon, there's maybe mold test, if there's some mold evidence, termite inspection, again, the appraisal.
Appraisal,
right?
It's always, yeah, the lender orders that. We don't really get involved so much in that. That's why we get the financing moving it, notifying the lender that we have something under contract, get them copies of the contract so they can go ahead and order the appraisal.
Right. Let's break for just a second. I sold a property earlier this year in Chevy Chase. We were able to sell it for $100,000 over the list price, and the appraised value came in much less than the sale price. But we got the appraisal waived as a contingency. Now, the importance of this, when you are a buyer and you're purchasing real estate in a competitive environment, which is what was occurring here. Again, we were representing the seller here. We wanted to get the most money, and we didn't want to have any hiccups down the road. We insisted that the buyer remove the appraisal as a contingency. Now, you heard me say earlier that there are two buyers for every house when there's a loan. The buyer pays the price. So let's say $1.2 million is the sales price, and let's say the property appraises for $1.1 million. There's a deficiency between the appraised value of $1.1 million and the sale price of $1.2 million of $100,000. So the bank will not lend against the $100,000 in deficiency. They'll only lend against what they came up with their certified value, which was the $1.1 million. And if they're lending 80% of $1.1 million, then the difference has to be made up out of the buyer's pocket. So in that case, as a seller's agent, by getting the waiver of the appraisal, the buyer was only able to borrow 80% of $1.1 million, okay, $880,000, not 80% of $1.2 million. So the buyer had to come up with the difference. So an additional $100,000 out of their pocket they had to come up with out of their savings to make it work. Very painful for the buyer, very painful, but they got the house they wanted. Now, as a buyer agent, Candy, what would you have done in that situation? Anything different? Now, again, you're trying to win the opportunity. So you would help the buyer see that difference. And as long as they were willing to come up with that additional cash, it becomes irrelevant?
No, it's not irrelevant because, you know, you always say, you know, the price is what you pay, the value is what you get. Mm-hmm. To this buyer, the value in that home exceeded the price.
True.
So if he wanted that price, or he wanted that house, he was willing to pay for it. If he had the cash and he could do it, then it was worth it to him to pay for it. But of course, that's as I would step in with my appraiser knowledge and make sure that when the appraisal was being done, that appraisal, if I suspected the house wasn't going to appraise, I would make sure that appraiser had every piece of information about this property.
Okay.
Even representing the buyer, I would really hound the listing agents to give me this information so we could get this thing appraised as high as possible. And to both agents, that, you know, both of the agents want to see this thing close.
Right.
So it benefits the buyer, the seller side, to also cooperate and get all the information to us.
That makes sense. So the different kinds of approaches as an appraiser, the sales comparison approach, the cost approach. Do you ever use the cost approach to come up with value?
You know, the cost approach, I don't, because I look at it as a couple of ways. When you're showing buyers a property, they don't walk into the house and say, well, it's listed for $600, but I don't think it's going to cost $550 to build it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right. They don't look at the cost.
Right.
They're looking at and then the breakdown between the cost of the lot versus the price of the structure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're buying the house, you're buying both of them together. So
right.
The division between land and structure of value is irrelevant. And the same thing with the income approach. Unless you're doing a commercial rental property like an apartment building, a multi-unit building, the income approach is almost irrelevant, because when people are buying houses, they're not buying it with the possibility of what the income could be on a single family home, a condo.
Right.
It's for them to live in. So those two approaches are available. And I do not know of any case in my, 14 years of doing this, that a lender has relied on a sale of a of a live-in home, a non-commercial property, a non-retail property, they based upon the cost approach or the income approach.
Hey, 8 common buyer mistakes, Candy. So let's just cover that. That's right in here in the Savvy Buyer Guide. Number one, not understanding the market. So somebody who jumps into the middle of a market, doesn't understand the market, and pays way too much because they don't know where the market really should be. They get excited, but they don't understand the hidden things like location of school districts and things like that. What's the second common buyer mistake?
Oh, buying the wrong type of home for you. You have to see what kind of homes are out there. Where do you feel comfortable?
Mm-hmm.
So do a little research. You know, you have, like you said, in our guide, we have pictures of all the different types of homes. You may need feel more comfortable in a townhouse, a mm-hmm. single family detached home, or maybe a large condo.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Depending on your style of living.
Right. Number three, an inaccurate survey. If you buy a house cash and you don't get a survey done, you can inherit serious problems where there are encumbrances of the neighbor's stuff on your property or your fence is on somebody else's property and you end up having to move it. What's number four?
Oh, undisclosed fix-ups.
Okay, so like you don't want to expect that every seller tells you about issues that will need attention, see, because there are going to be things that may not be perfect. And so you want to be careful on the buy side to have a very good home inspector to make sure that the quality of the work that has been done previously is good. What's number five?
Unexpected closing costs.
Okay, for instance, if you buy in certain areas like, say, Montgomery Village, there's a 0.1% extra tax as a buyer when you buy into that area because they're trying to improve the infrastructure of Montgomery Village. You just need to know before you put the contract in, you're going to have that additional expense. Something like that might come up. What's number six?
Rushing the closing.
Okay, take your time during this part of the process. Don't be in such a rush to come to closing unless there's some major driver, like you're expecting a baby in the next 3 weeks and you want to get in before you settle. Though that may not be the best. So you want to consider, what does it cost you to rush your closing? You want to consider that. Number seven.
Buying a home through the listing agent.
Okay. So buying a home directly from the listing agent is not a bad thing, but you're not getting representation when you purchase that way. Now, we're very careful when we have buyers come to us. We do write contracts with them. We're not representing the buyer on our own listings because we only ever represent the seller when we list the house. That's just our personal business decision. But we will be fair, honest, and ethical with them. But if you're ready to buy a house, you want to have representation as a purchaser, give yourself the opportunity of talking with someone who could represent you. Number eight.
The Clue Report.
The Clue Report. What's that?
It's a report that your insurance agent can give you.
Okay. That shows whether claims have been filed or not filed against that property. And they can possibly upend the sale of a property if there's been a major claim against the property, because not only does it impact you as a homeowner if you've made a claim against the property, but it will impact the insurance cost for the new buyer for the next few years until it drops off the Clue Report. Depending upon where you are, it'll stay on the Clue Report for 3 years or 5 years. Plus, we've got more in this Savvy Buyer Guide. This is our Get Your Dream House for the Best Price. There's these mistakes that you don't want to make yourself as a potential purchaser. I got to take another break in just a moment. I'll give you my final thoughts right after this.